Shot clock down to five. Harden against Rubio. Harden leans in. Good! Out of three! What an answer! Got to hurry it up here. Here's Mitchell. Gets a look. Short. Rebound Tucker. And he's fouled with 6.5 left. Rubio hits. 1 second to go. And that's it. The Rockets take a 3-0 series lead. Winning in Salt Lake City. 104-101.
Good morning. So much to get into on the week of the NFL draft, which is coming up in only 3 days with the first round of the draft. Mike, Seth, and Paul. Let's start with the Rockets game on Saturday night. Very interesting game. Bizarre game. They trailed basically the entire game, and they found a way to win 104-101. And it felt like the kind of game that if you're going to be a championship teams win those kind of games.
Championship teams win those kinds of games. Frankly, I'm shocked that anybody's saying, wow, that's a game the Rockets should have lost, because about midway through the second quarter, I figured that was going to be a blowout for the Rockets. I was never in doubt of the Rockets' victory in that game, because the Jazz were spending every last bullet they had in the first half, and you saw it when they came out in the second half. They were zapped. They were just exhausted, and it was just a matter of time until Harden started hitting his shots in the fourth quarter. Things settled down, and I actually honestly was a little bit disappointed that it wasn't a double-digit victory by the Rockets. There was this pathetic performance over the first three. Well, you know what? It was a pathetic shooting performance by James Harden. The critical thing is that, as the halftime crew adroitly pointed out, Harden was still very effective despite his shooting lows. I felt great about that game. That was my favorite game. It was the most pathetic performance by the Jazz. Absolutely pathetic. But they're like awful. And I could tell from the second quarter you weren't going to be able to sustain that.
That was not my favorite game. I was frustrated watching it. However, to your original point, I would say championship teams get away playing like that against teams that aren't on their level. And the Jazz aren't on their level. And set to what you were saying, I never felt uncomfortable about the Rockets winning. I was more annoyed that James Harden stunk. I was getting a little excited for Harden because at the beginning of this game, it was a little shovey. There was a dust up that he had. I forget who it was with. And I was thinking to myself,
Crowder?
Jay Crowder. And I'm like, hey, look at Harden stepping up for himself and shoving a guy. But it felt like he was, out of his element for the entire rest of the game. But whatever, it doesn't matter. You're so much better than Utah. Like, Utah just does not matter from a basketball perspective.
What a brutal loss for Utah. I mean, it was the first game that Mitchell and Rudy Gobert really played well, and they still lost.
Did Donovan Mitchell play well past the first quarter? He was 4-for-20. He missed the wide open three at the end. Donovan Mitchell was great in the first quarter, and then he wouldn't stop yapping to Paul and Harden, acting like they were owning the Rockets. Well, they were up by 2 and 4 points for most of the game.
Well, that was their problem.
Mike, it was the most infuriating game to me. It was just the looks on the Jazz faces where anytime there was any kind of physicality, it was their particular brand of flopping in this game was claiming they'd been hit in the eye. Have you noticed that in this series? Ingles has his hand to his eye. Like, every damn possession.
He's gotten annoying.
Ingles is my least favorite non-Duke player on that team.
Stop going to the ref.
Grayson Allen. The fact that I have to see Grayson Allen on the sideline makes me angry enough. But Donovan Mitchell was largely ineffective after the first quarter.
What I'm saying is I'm just taking the game in totality. I'm just using the whole four quarters. Because in game one and game two, he was not effective at all.
Right.
Whereas in game three, Donovan Mitchell had 34 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. So if you had asked a Jazz fan before on Saturday at 3 p.m., would you take that? They'd probably say yes.
I would have taken it more evenly distributed and maybe perhaps weighted towards the fourth quarter if I were a Jazz fan.
Maybe.
I mean, he made 5 of his first 7. Then he missed 4 of his next 20. He missed 5 free throws. Like, it was not a clutch performance whatsoever.
Agreed on that. Yeah. And the fact that he missed the free throws was a big issue for them. What I'm saying is their two best players were actually effective in the game.
Yeah.
They were effective. They weren't losing the game with their best players on the floor. And despite that, and despite the fact that Harden had such a poor shooting night, they were still unable to pull away. And that, to me, was the story, that the Rockets role players did enough for the first three quarters until finally James Harden got going and then brought them home.
You know what I would say, too, is that Harden was really, really effective in everywhere except putting the ball through the hoop. Like the fact that the Jazz were still focusing all their efforts on Harden, but then doing a better job of closing out on the kickouts and all those things. The Jazz were doing a great job of flying around defensively, but their strategy was still largely to push Harden to his right and then clog the paint. So Harden didn't have that many options. He was missing his open shots when he did have the options, but the entire offense responded to it. And then especially also in the fourth quarter when they let Chris Paul bring the ball up the court a few times and they sent Harden to the corner. But like that's the ability of Chris Paul to control the game when he needs to and keep things from getting out of control, I think is, if anything, maybe the best sign of how this team is different than it had been in the past. And maybe how it was with the Spurs. If Harden didn't have Chris Paul with him, what's the likelihood that this would have turned into a Spurs Game 6 performance from 2017?
Well, I don't know, but they probably would have lost the game.
Yeah.
Just because they wouldn't have had enough points, right? I mean, I'm guessing at some point Harden would have scored some points, right? But they probably would have lost because Chris Paul scored 18 points, and if he wasn't there,
right,
they would have been trailing like 12.
I mean, that's a simple way of putting it if you just want to do mathematics. But I'm talking about Harden specifically in the way he responded to the poor performance. Like, versus the Jazz in Game 6 in 2017, he just disappeared. The Spurs. He just became a non-factor, like a very, very negative factor. Where in this game, he just kept playing his game. You know, he was taking open shots
shooting when
he took them. He was distributing the ball well.
Attacking.
He was running their offense. Yeah, he was attacking. You know what?
Gobert played well, but he kept attacking.
He kept attacking. Instead of settling for a bunch of easy, that's a really good point, Paul. Like, he just kept attacking. He kept doing,
and I could tolerate that. You know, you know what? As annoyed as I was that he was missing all those shots, had it been all step back threes, I would have been bitching and moaning on Twitter.
Cause missed shots happen. And I just, like, if I watch that game and watch him play from the first quarter through the fourth, I saw a pretty consistent effort and, like, a pretty consistent competency outside of just missing the shots. That's why it was a fun game for me, was it was really fun to see them respond to that pressure the way they did. That could have easily been, especially the way the Jazz came out, that could have turned into, you know what, they're going to grab one of these games from us and just kind of coast through the second half and see what happens. They just fought on and scrapped. This might end up making the difference versus the Warriors if you got one less game to play and you're that much fresher.
Well, we'll see, because they can close things out tonight in game number 4. Mike, Seth, and Paul, on a Monday, do we believe what James Harden said in the postgame when he was interviewed by Cassidy Hubbard? He set a record. He missed the first 14 shots that he took. And here's what happened after this win.
A hard-fought win, despite you going 0-15 from the field, mentally. Yes, mentally. You didn't know that?
I went 0-15.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that. From the field, I don't remember.
Chris, what were you saying to
him? I went up to him right there in that timeout, and I said, get your swag up. You know how we play. We don't play that percentages. We don't look at how many shots you'd have missed or made. We put the work in. That's what you work all summer for. And we believe in them like we believe in Gerald and everybody on our team. And we keep playing and stay the course.
Mentally, what were you going through those first 3.5 quarters before you finally hit?
Nothing. I was aggressive. They were doing a good job of contesting my shots. And those shots that I shoot every single day, I'm going to live with them. Fourth quarter, they fell in. So game 4, nothing changes. I'm going to keep shooting the same shots.
He definitely knew he was 0-15.
No, I don't think so. I think he knew he was 0-15. But why would he know he was 0-15?
Paul, what do you think?
I feel like he just kept on going and going and going like the Energizer Bunny, and he probably did not know what the number was. He was probably aware of the fact that he didn't make the shot, but the actual number, after a certain point, I think I would lose track too, and I think it's healthy to lose track.
Okay, well, so yeah, I don't think most guys are checking their stats throughout the game.
So he definitely knew the 0.
Probably. Maybe he hadn't thought about it at all.
Well, the way he dunked the first time he made a shot was the kind of dunk that made me feel like it was a release of frustration.
He was aware he was not shooting well. And I'm sure he probably knew he was 0-for, but he just didn't realize it had turned into 15 shots. Yeah, like I would prefer that James Harden, who, by the way, had enough of a hard time just getting back on defense in the second half. That was annoying. Remember how bad the Heat were at doing that, but there's nothing you could say about it because they kept winning all the time. And they were good defensively.
Dwayne Wade, that's
but
what
they
he was
used to
at.
Complain so much and not get back on defense and just waste a possession. Let's in a game like that, especially when you're not shooting well, at least get back on defense. I don't think I would be really surprised. You got enough to worry about other than like keeping traffic.
Okay.
Are you saying that he didn't know he was 0-for, or he didn't know he was 0-15? Do you think he knows after every missed shot, like, now I'm 2-for-5, now I'm 2-for-7, now I'm 3-for-8?
I think he knew he was 0 for a bunch.
Right.
Maybe
yeah.
not specifically 0 for 15.
It was the 0 for 15 that shocked him. He knew he was not shooting well, but he's just going to keep shooting. He just didn't. Part of keeping shooting and keeping at up with the same strategy when you know you're not playing well is not keeping track of each specific miss.
I do think there was a little Southern Belle going on.
Oh, it's not.
I think there's a little Southern Belle happening.
Mike,
I'm getting annoyed
because this is a this
Southern
is like no, honestly, this is sports viewer versus sports participant. This is like, oh, Mike Meltzer, who's sitting watching and seeing the stat ticker go up every single time in each missed shot, can easily keep track of this.
Yes.
James Harden, who's trying to bring the ball up the court, trying to distribute the ball, trying to drive, trying to kick, trying to take step-back threes, trying to come back and play defense most of the time, doesn't necessarily keep track of each specific missed shot. But he definitely knew he was over.
And you've seen at the end of games, Mike, how these guys, when they're at the podium, are typically looking at a stat sheet and going, oh, look at this. Look at the assist number right there.
They can often be surprised.
Well, there's times when you come out of a game where you, like I can just remember, you think you had a really good defensive performance, and maybe you did, like as a group, and then you see like, oh wow, the other team had 140 yards rushing. How'd that happen? And then you're like, then you start thinking about like, oh yeah, they had one big run in the second quarter. So it's kind of a blur with that statistically. I'd say the vast majority of athletes don't know their specific stats during the game. Maybe they do at the half and then again at the end of the game. But Antonio Brown does. It can be really poisonous to your psychological mindset when you start to keep track of the stats too much, because it's really easy to get down
Antonio.
On yourself. So when you start flipping out, you know what though? I don't know if Antonio, like when he would flip out after a victory, I doubt he knew like that he had 17 targets, because then he would at least know like, all right, I gotta not act
targets.
Like I'm not getting any attention at all.
I don't know what it's going to mean for the next round, Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Monday, but I do know that as far as this series and this round, like I've been on the other end of this so many times. We've been on the other end of this with like the Texans and the Patriots, where you play so well and your guys are playing so well, but then ultimately at the end, the other team is just better and they find a way to win. And that's what was most impressive to me about Saturday, is that for a while, the problem with Utah is that they just never, the lead never got to where it needed to be.
Right.
They needed the lead to be 10 or 12 or somewhere like that, but it was always sticking around like 6 points, maybe 8 points, but usually around six, maybe four. Then the Rockets roll guys would always get a basket to keep them close, and ultimately they created a situation where they could bring it home, where their best guys could bring it home at the very end.
That's where the Jazz need to be really embarrassed, is that you are a very good rebounding team, and the Rockets are a horrendous rebounding team, and then PJ Tucker just flat out out-testicled you at the end. Like, he just flat out, those two rebounds in the last 10 or 11 seconds were the game clinchers there. That was just awesome. He flew in from Mexico City for that final rebound and just out-hustled everybody. That was beautiful to watch.